It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Early Saturday, 26-year-old Aaron Seiler was killed by the Kenosha police in what is Wisconsin's seventh officer-involved shooting so far this year. Police say Aaron armed himself with a weapon when he was confronted by an officer who then shot him.
This comes a week after a Madison police officer killed unarmed black 19-year-old Tony Robinson, sparking protests. In 2014, Wisconsin became the first state in the country to require an independent investigation of all officer-involved shootings, but lawmakers and advocates are still pushing to require further measures in these investigations.
Michael Bell is one of those advocates. He's a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force. His son was killed by Kenosha police in 2004. He also went to the scene of Saturday's shooting of Aaron Seiler to see for himself if the new law was being followed. Michael Bell joins us now. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, Rob, Veronica, thank you for having me.
Well, you were on the scene in the aftermath of Wisconsin's seventh officer-related death this year in Kenosha. This was a Saturday. Why did you want to be there?
Well, you know, I've been our family and a lot of others in the state of Wisconsin have been working for external investigation, and that law was implemented in April 2014, and we don't really have any monitors to see that that if the law is being complied with. So it was important for me. This shooting occurred about 2 miles from our house, to go down there and see if the Department of Criminal Justice or who were the investigators that were going to be taking evidence at the scene.
And were there particular things that you were looking for that would clue you in that yes, the new law was being followed to the letter?
Well, I was able to speak directly with the Department of Criminal Investigations investigator. His name was Gil Hernandez. He looked like he was being very overworked. It looked like the stress level was very high. I also did see a special agent down there from a DCI, and also there was a female agent that actually spent some time with the family.
And as we said, this is Wisconsin's seventh officer-involved shooting this year. What do we know so far about this particular case?
Essentially, 26-year-old man had a 4-year-old daughter. I think he was there was a felony warrant out for him, but it was for an administrative type thing. I think he didn't see his probation or parole officer or something like that. There was a violent car accident. It appears that they left on foot. The officer that was on the scene at the time, somehow or another, confronted him in an alleyway, and from what witnesses report, fired probably about 6 shots.
Now, you've been leading the call for officer-involved shootings to be investigated by an outside group, an external group. That idea, as you said, is now law. What is your take on how it's working, especially if we look at the case of these two recent shootings, Tony Robinson's death and now Aaron Seiler in Kenosha?
Well, our original law had 3 parts. Let's make sure that the officer was in a clear frame of mind. Let's have an external investigation, and let's have an independent review of that investigation. We were able to get the second part done, that there would be an external investigation. And what we're trying to do is go back for these other parts. The public needs to be assured that there are checks and balances in place. And if you take a look at the aviation industry, I'm a retired Air Force officer and a pilot. Its success is based upon 6 core elements, and law enforcement aren't doing those 6 core elements, and that's what needs to occur for us to build additional trust with law enforcement.
Your own son was killed in an officer-involved death in 2004, and today there's a huge national spotlight on deaths like his where a police officer is involved, and that wasn't the case when your son was killed. What is going through your mind right now as a father, as an activist, as you watch this national conversation unfolding about officer-involved deaths?
I think my son is up in heaven laughing a little bit because here his dad is 11 years later still working at it, and And I think we've made progress. Remember, this is also good for law enforcement as it is for the community because it actually brings us closer and it makes things clearer. And maybe it will reduce the number of shootings that occur because about 25% of the shootings are mistake effect shootings where somebody misinterpreted a wallet for a gun, or in my son's case, an officer had hooked his gun on a car mirror and assumed that was my son, and those types of things. So if we can reduce those shootings, I'm really going to be happy because now we're going to have a professional database that monitors these types of things and so forth.
Representative Chris Taylor, who championed this new legislation that has passed, she's calling for more requirements, a review panel of the outside investigation, mandatory blood draws, and some of these other things that were initially in there but didn't make the first round. Why do you think more needs to be added to this law?
Well, you know, it's like a three-legged stool. And right now we only have one leg. You need these other two parts. I mean, the public needs to be sure that if an officer decides to use deadly force, that he was in a clear frame of mind. Shame on them if they're under the influence of steroids or mood-altering drugs or alcohol and something like that. But they also need to know that there was an independent review. In my own son's case, I mean, the DA was very close to the police department. He used their endorsements in his next political campaign. There were four police-involved deaths in a 16-month period. He refused to give any of those families an inquest. And so there needs to be an independent review to determine probable cause. And then once you determine that probable cause, you need to distribute the facts of that case throughout the state so that other officers say, this particular case killed someone, and if I do the exact same thing that officer did, I might do it also. And that's the way we're going to reduce the number of police-involved shootings in the state of Wisconsin.
This law calling for an outside investigation, an external investigation, it's still pretty new, and Wisconsin is the first in the country to have a law like this. Is it too soon to be asking for more?
I don't believe so, because there have been pockets of groups, either counties or cities around the state or around the nation, that have had external investigation, but never mandated on a statewide level. And we always knew that this is an important part. Now, this independent review is just advisory. It's essentially a group of law professionals, just not law enforcement, that would look at the facts of the case and say, you know, you did cover everything, or you forgot to do something. You might want to take a look at it here. And we were even asking for a police academy trainer to be on that board, so that way if seven of the shootings determined that there was something that could be improved upon, that trainer can immediately take it back to the academy and say, hey, let's do this differently. This cost seven lives last year or something like that.
A few weeks ago, you testified as part of the president's task force on 21st century policing in Washington. What are you advocating for nationally?
I'm advocating for the law enforcement to model itself after the successes in the aviation industry. If you take a look at what happened in aviation from 1956 to today, the numbers are astronomically successful. But law enforcement are failing at those core elements that aviation is doing, and we're in a national crisis. And so somebody had to speak up on that behalf, and really a pilot is the right person to do that. If you take a look at statistics, our jobs are far more deadly than that of law enforcement, because everything that we do, there's threats in a mountain, a thunderstorm, a person on the ground, or a person in a cockpit, a bird. Everything's a threat to us, and they happen very fast. And so the things that we do in aviation that makes us successful will also lead to success in law enforcement.
And watching your testimony, you're also advocating for some particular training from an emotional standpoint to help police officers, it sounds like.
Yes, I am, because I recognize as a military officer that there are people that suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And one of the people that were testifying at the task force said that, you know, if you're a military person, you go into combat scenario, you're there for 2 or 3 years. But a law enforcement officer is typically there a lifetime. So they're being exposed to much stress and much trauma, and are they processing it correctly? And there are new techniques out there. And one of the things that I discovered on my own journey was that there was a group out in California, a doctor of family medicine, her name is Laurel Mellon. She developed something called emotions-based training. And I found it to be very successful in helping process the emotions that were related to the death of my son. And I think that would be beneficial to law enforcement also.
The investigation into Tony Robinson's death is likely to be very closely followed by the media. What are you going to be focusing on throughout that process?
Well, first off, I have to tip my hat to Chief Koval, because, number one, immediately Department of Criminal Investigations was brought in. And number two, he did something beyond what was required. That officer was actually brought to a hospital, and his blood was checked to make sure that he was in a clear frame of mind. They haven't released those results yet, but at least they did that. And then I'm going to be looking for what is the outcome. you know, there's going to be a number of things that are going to have to be looked at. My own personal experience, when I look at this, I ask myself, why did the officer rush to break down that door? There was only this young man in the apartment, and if he would have waited just 30 seconds more, backup might have been there, and Tony Robinson might be alive today. So we're going to be focusing on that very unique period of time there and why this officer made a decision to crash through that door and not wait 30 seconds more, because that could be a training issue that would be brought out by independent review.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Anytime.
We've been speaking with Michael Bell, retired Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Air Force, father of Michael E. Bell, who was shot and killed by Kenosha police in 2004.